Well, I have no doubt that his heart is very much in the place that liberation theology is in. It is very difficult. Some of the people, unfortunately, who are influenced by liberation theology, and in Argentina, you know, they join guerrilla movements, and people could think, oh, look, that's what happens when you're influenced by liberation theology. But again, if you're in a situation where there is great oppression and you feel you can't get anywhere but nonviolent struggle, some people can feel that they have no option but to take up arms. And maybe there will be people who have been influenced by liberation theology, and then, of course, everything can be blamed on liberation theology. But I think, for example, if El Salvador, or where I was as well for some time, and in the parish of San Antonio Abad, for example, one night I was speaking with a woman, and I can mention her name now, I suppose, Mabel. Mabel was a young woman at that time, and there were about 100 young leaders doing a retreat that weekend in that parish. And the military came in at night because they were worried when young people gathered, of course, and thought it was all subversion and all the rest. Drove in through the gates with their tanks. The parish priest came out in front of them to try and stop them. But unlike what happened, say, in the Philippines some years later with the Marcos regime, they simply drove on and they killed him. And then they jumped out and opened fire, and the young people fled for their lives in the middle of the night.
They killed the parish priest?
They killed the parish priest, oh yeah. And then four of the young people were shot dead and the others escaped. One of the young women who escaped that night was Mabel. And she went into exile in Mexico, she told me this herself, and others went and joined the guerrillas because they felt after that night, what else could they do? These people would be coming after them, so they needed to go into the hills and fight back. And Mabel, who was in Mexico then, after 6 months, said she couldn't stay away any longer. She knew what was happening to her people. Here was she in Mexico, she had to be with them. So she went back to try and continue the struggle with them. But unfortunately, she was kidnapped one night by the military. She was gang-raped all night long, and she had a child out of it. And I met her 10 years after this, and she had not yet accepted her daughter. And her daughter used to ask her, "Mammy, where is my daddy?" And she couldn't tell her how she came to conceive her. And so that was a terribly sad situation. And as I talk about Mabel, I'm reminded of Sister Diana Ortiz and Ursuline Sister in Guatemala. When I was in Guatemala not that long before, Diana Ortiz had been kidnapped, had been gang raped, and had a child. But she felt suicidal about that, and she actually had an abortion. Her view was that she was suicidal, and if she was to try and go through with the pregnancy, she just couldn't do it, and both would have been dead, her baby and herself. So this way, by having the abortion, she saved herself, and she has spent the rest of her life dedicated to working with torture victims. And as she says, you know, the Christian God is a God who was tortured, and giving herself to the service of people who have been tortured is her way of expressing her love of God. And yet this is a sister who also had an abortion, but had it because she'd been gang-raped and just couldn't accept what had happened, obviously, you know. And it just shows you again just how complex all these situations are, and when you're living in these situations and living through them, there's just no easy answers. But for some people this is very scary, of course, and it's much easier to have a theology that couldn't in any way give rise to any responses like that on the part of people. I mean, when you take the Exodus story, you have the story of God leading the Israelites out of Egypt, and the Egyptians die in the sea, pursuing them, according to the Bible story. Now, you could say, I mean, could God not have done it in a way that nobody was injured, nobody suffered, nobody died? Was there not an easier way out of it? But you see, life is very complex, and in these conditions and in these circumstances, life is very complex.
But there are those who would say that that is exactly the problem with liberation theology, that it harks back to an Old Testament God, but the God that we believe in as Christians is Jesus Christ, who in the garden told Peter to put away his sword and fixed the ear of the servant. Now, it may be a symbolic story, but basically he went to his death unjustly on a cross in horrendous circumstances and said, "I forgive them."
Yes.
And that Christianity, if it's to mean anything, must hold up those ideals.
Well, it does. And the people who believe in the Exodus story, they were not people advocating violence. They were people who were kind of fleeing for their lives in the hope of having a better life in other conditions. But other people died who pursued them. So it isn't as though liberation theology is advocating that you go up against your oppressor with arms and kill them. You hope that won't happen. But the oppressor chasing you could come to grief. Gustavo Gutierrez, who was the founding father of liberation theology, really, and gave it its name, he speaks about, you know, refers to the text of the Bible which says, love your enemies, and he points out very well that love your enemies in the Bible is presupposing you will have enemies. But the issue is how you relate to them. So if you do take stands on behalf of the economically poor and the politically repressed in life, which liberation theology, you know, draws attention to this being the kind of world very often people are in, and says that God doesn't want this to continue, and asks people how are you going to respond in the light of God being this way and you believing in this God, you will have enemies. So, you know, liberation theology too would say that... you know, that the resurrection is actually at the heart of Christian faith. And people think, I have said this when people say the resurrection, they wouldn't have thought that was so central to liberation theology. But Gutierrez, for example, has written a book called The God of Life, and his whole theology is based on responding to the question, how do you speak about a God of love in a world of unjust and premature death? So the resurrection, you know, shows a God who's very concerned about people dying unjustly and prematurely and dying at all, and who wants people to live and to live forever and to live forever in love. And so, you know, that is the message of liberation theology. That is our God, and these are our values. And we want people who are suffering early deaths and unjust deaths and persecution and torture and hunger and all these things that threaten their lives. We want this addressed, God wants this addressed, and we want to go on with this God into eternity for a life of everlasting love.
And at the core of that liberation theology, you mentioned, is the resurrection, and is that hope that we can bring about change here on earth. It's not all about waiting till the afterlife.
Oh, certainly not. We can bring about change in this life. We have to believe that. And I think Pope Francis is a very good example of how, in a situation where so many people were discouraged, disillusioned, depressed even, in a comparatively short space of time, he's showing already that we can make a difference.